You guys ready? So where's the helicopter, Bob? All right. You guys ready? Okay. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's February 21st. The board met in closed session. We reviewed possible action on dismissal of district employees.
I'll move approval of the minutes of February 7th.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any discussion on the minutes of February 7th? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. And I did want to announce that Dr. Eisendrath Rogers is not here this evening. She has something very exciting. She's down in Los Angeles supporting someone that she's very close to and becoming a citizen of the United States. Very exciting stuff. So congratulations to the family. Correspondence. The board did receive two pieces of correspondence. One was from Charlie Perry S., thanking the board and the district for raising the pay of substitute teachers. Mr. Perry S. is a teacher here at Los Osos Middle School. And then the board also received correspondence from Mrs. Odile Ariel regarding Pacheco School and the preschool transitional kindergarten that's being constructed there. Move on to public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board at this time? And seeing no one, we'll close public comment. We do have Aaron from Pacific Beach. Aaron, we heard you did a great job at mock trial.
Good evening. My name is Aaron Albertson, and I'm a senior at Pacific Beach High School. Through this year, we've kept a steady number of around 70 students enrolled at Pacific Beach. We have also seen six of our students already graduate around the beginning and middle of this year, and I'm sure that number will not stay the same. And we also have multiple students concurrently enrolled at Cuesta College in Pacific Beach. Now, Ms. Jacobson, our art teacher, is using the Teach Grant money that the school had received earlier this year to help her students create human sculptures. Mr. A., our government teacher, is having his class take on our second year of Project Citizen. We're coming off of our first year where the state was so pleased with our presentation that we were invited by the state leadership to attend a state championship in San Francisco. Though we were unable to make it there because confliction between that and our graduation ceremony. But even so, our last year's project is used as a template for other schools. And given mock trial, now that it has been over with countywide, seeing Templeton to the state finals, I don't know if the state finals have happened already, but I'm sure you guys can bring that up later. I believe that Pacific Beach has shown that even though we are quite this small school, we're still very capable. Taking home two trophies, one of which I received for being the best defense attorney in the county, no big deal. And the second trophy was awarded to a fellow senior, Randy Reynaga, for being the best prosecution witness. So Ms. Newman was extremely excited about that. And I just want to add that this was his and my first year at Pacific Beach High School going to mock trial, when there are several others at the five other high schools who have 3 to 5 years under their belts. So we were very excited as well. I also want to say that the success of our students wouldn't have been as much as they were if it wasn't for our attorney coaches, Walt Miller and Michael, whose last name I cannot remember. Huh? Cummings, okay. And along with our teacher coach Miss Newman. And given Miss Newman, her writing class, has been implementing the CSU materials such as expository reading and writing. After the competitions of mock trial ended, she switched her mock trial class to something like the expository reading and writing, but it's more of the juvenile justice, which adds to the mock trial experience. And our math teacher, Ms. Coyner, has began implementing the California Common Core States Standards, which, in my opinion, have been very interesting and fairly different from what I'm used to in a math class. But that's not a bad thing. And we've also welcomed back our counselor, Ms. Ortiz, from having her child. And ever since she got back, she's been extremely busy, and she's helped a few students with their job shadows, and there's much more coming.
Which is full of the suggestions that your government team made, which is basically opening up the avenues for use in an educational setting. So your work, the fruits of your labor, I think, will be rewarded if the board adopts that policy, and it's a good one. So good work.
I'd like to just go back to our consensus on the order of business. I note that we have, right now we'd be having the superintendent's updates, but I also see that we have three action consent or action discussion items, two of which we have people in the public that would like to address the board. And I'm wondering if the board would have an interest in flip-flopping the action discussion items for the superintendent's updates so that the people that are here from the public would have an opportunity to address us and then leave if they'd like to. So Mr. Quisenberry, would you be okay with that? Everybody okay with that? Dr. Prater, do you see a problem with that? Okay. Let's go ahead. Let's move that around then, and we'll go to item number one, request from Sheer Edge to modify scope of project to develop Avila School. And let me get over to my action discussion. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. And let me flip to my item also. Thank you. And as the board is aware, the project to develop the Avila School site has faced numerous challenges over the multitude of years that we've been working on it, about 4 to 5 years so far. And Sheer Edge, the developer, was selected to spearhead the project. And Mike Hodges is here tonight, and he has a revised concept, which they hope that the board will approve in concept and be able to help move the project forward and address the community, the county, and our own concerns about the project itself. You ready, Mike? I introduce to you Mike Hodge. And he has.
Is Mr. Ohilski coming tonight?
Yes, he said about 7:15.
Would you like us to wait on yours, and then we could actually go to the YMCA discussion right
okay,
now?
That'd be fine.
If that's okay with the board?
Sure.
Okay, let's move then to let's move to item number two, which is action on ballot for 2012 CSBA delegate assembly election. Dr. Prater.
As a member as a member district of the California School Board Association, San Luis Coastal Unified School District may vote for delegates representing Region 9C, San Luis Obispo County. The two seats for Region 9C have staggered terms so that only one seat is up for election at a time. The board may only vote for a single nominee on behalf of the full board. Mark Buckman has completed his second term as a delegate and has been nominated once again. No other nominations were received.
Okay, we'll take it. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Millar.
I'd just like to point out there's been no scandals during Mr. Buckman's two terms, so I think that's important to know.
Anybody else like to make a comment? May I have, I'm sorry, Mrs. Roger.
I was going to try to figure out how to word this. I guess what I'm moving here is our submission of the nomination of Mark Buckman for delegate to California School Boards Association.
If I could add, I think our support and our vote, I think, is what we're looking for.
You are voting. Okay.
Okay.
The nomination. You've already submitted the nomination.
Okay. So we have a motion. Do we have a second? Mrs. Sheffer. So we have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any other discussion? Okay, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Congratulations, Mark.
I vote.
Well, I hope you vote for yourself. It's too late. Okay, let's go. Let's move on to item number 3, the YMCA request to agendize appeal for reduced facility rental rates. Dr. Prater.
Yes, as part of our agenda development process, the board has come up with a protocol for advanced agenda items. And it was requested by the CEO of the YMCA in San Luis Obispo, Jennifer Rines, to put an item on the board agenda for the board to weigh in and reconsider the fee structure for rent and for the board to weigh in on
board on this item. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Is there any discussion on this item? Mrs. Roger.
I would like to support bringing this back as an agenda item. I was impressed by the ways in which the YMCA suggested they would be able to assist in improving student achievement, but I also questioned the ability of their employees, if they're minimum wage employees, to really go to have the skill sets necessary to really assist our students. So if it does come back as an agenda item, I would love to hear the YMCA speak to their employees and what skills they have that they could be applied. Okay, so I guess I would like to move that we agendize this item at the next board meeting.
Okay, we have a motion, Mr. Millar. Would you like to? We don't have a second yet, so we still have plenty of time for discussion.
Well, I do not want to see it come forward on the agenda because I think it's a administration staff level function. I also think we're going to upset all kinds of other organizations that are under the rent structure and do pay under the rent structure. This is something that should be worked out on the staff level if changes need to be made at all.
Okay. Other comments from board members? Mr. Buckman.
I in listening to Mr. Millar, I have to agree that I think that this would be a good concept and a good opportunity for the YMCA, for the staff to get together. It's a fairly complicated matter. It's something that involves our students, and I agree. I think this is something that we should ask staff to come back with some recommendations or something in writing in the future.
And let me just add that part of the reason for my thinking it should stay on the staff level is I was encouraged by the memo from Dr. Prater about the meetings and the collaborations and the ideas. So I'd like to see you guys figure out something brilliant.
Other board members? Well, I am in favor, actually, of agendizing it. Given the discussion that we've been having, what I'd like to see is this be placed on a future agenda, but only after the staff level discussions have taken place between our staff and the YMCA staff for something much more substantive that we can look at and actually consider. And so I am in favor of placing it on there, but not until after we have those discussions. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I support putting it on the agenda also with the same
provisions that you mentioned, Mr. Unger.
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on that? Okay, we have a motion to place it on an advanced agenda. I think with discussion between our staff and their staff, do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a second by Mr. Quisenberry. So do you understand, Mrs. Holmes, okay. So any further discussion? Bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Carries 4-2.
No.
No, we're tied up.
No, Mark, were you a yes or no?
Yes.
Mark was a yes. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was 4-2.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So Walt is a no?
Walt is a no, and Ellen is a no, and Mark and Marilyn and Jim and I are yeses. So bringing it back to the board after the administration has had an opportunity to meet with you and come up with a more solid concept. Okay.
President Unger.
Yeah.
Is there a timeline that you see as being reasonable, given the amount of right? It would be very helpful. As we're starting to approach the budget development process, we're working all our horses under the hood, and so I'm wondering if I could have a little bit of time to bring that back, say, into April.
I think you need as much time as you need to do the job you're doing right now, plus have a more thorough discussion with the Y. And I don't know if an April discussion is fine. I think I need to leave it up to you to have those discussions and to bring something back that you think will satisfy the board and enable the board to have that.
So we need to amend the lease to reflect the actual approved project from what was proposed originally or in the last lease. In the last lease, we accounted for 12 units in the first phase. The county only approved 9. So we do need to amend the lease to reduce it from 12 to 9. We're talking about really, you know, the reality of what the county did in their review and approval process. The second portion of this is we also want to amend the language for our option on parcel 2, which is the vacant land that includes the schoolhouse. We did go forward, the school district went forward with a request to do a public lot to subdivide the schoolhouse from the remainder of the vacant property. In their infinite wisdom, the Board of Supervisors declined that public lot, even though we would contend as a public agency you have the right to do a public lot. But the county did decline that public lot. That's all I can say. It happened. Subsequent to that, then, we met with the environmental consultants for the county. Yes?
Pardon me, Mr. Ohilski. Could you just explain in very simple terms what a public lot is?
Okay, a public lot is a lot that's created by a public entity. A public entity can do a subdivision of property they own for purposes of sale or leasing or other purposes. When you do a public lot, it can't have the same restrictions on it that a regular subdivision would have because you're considered to be entitled as a public entity. So if I came in to do a subdivision of my lot here in Los Osos, the county could put X, Y, and Z conditions on that subdivision. But as a public entity with a public lot, you cannot be conditioned. So just as a matter, at least our position was, as a matter of right, you're entitled to this public lot. However, the county did deny that public lot. So that did not allow us to separate the schoolhouse from the rest of the vacant property, which was the original intent. So the schoolhouse restoration could go separate from the remainder of the parcel. We did not have the ability to do that. So we subsequently met, Ty Green met with us and the county's planning staff, and we came up with a scenario that we believe makes the best economic sense for both the district and the developer. It's still conceptual at this point, so we're not prepared to discuss it in public. But what we're proposing to do is amend the lease secondly in the option language to allow for the development that we think now is most feasible on that second parcel. So those are the two things that we just want you to give direction to. Staff is to go ahead and bring back the amended ground lease to you. First of all, just to reflect the fact that the approved project is the approved project, and there's nothing we can do about that. And we're not complaining about it, but the original lease showed 12 units, and we only got 9. And then secondly, just to change the language as far as the option on the second parcel to reflect what we think now will be most approvable by the county and most productive for both the district and the developer. So all we're asking is for your board to give that direction to staff so then we can bring back the final language on the ground lease.
Questions from Mr. Miller.
I'm sorry, but I just wanted to add that from staff's point of view, what we've been engaged in all along has been the conversations with the county. Our attorney has been engaged in regular conversations with the developer. Nothing except for the actions of the county supervisors were a surprise to us, and the proposals that they were presenting and those kinds of things. And what they have in mind, we have a general sense of that, but we're waiting for a couple of things which relate to detail. The ground lease piece itself, what I want to do is have the final. Have you delivered to Ty the final document?
No, we were waiting till after this evening.
So after we get the final document to review what they're asking for, then we would bring back a recommendation to the board. I think right now it's the board's opportunity to ask general questions about where the project has been, where it's going, and what kind of sense of what the project means to you from the developer, since they're here today and they do have some changes. I think they have some general ideas of those changes, and I think it's time for you guys to go ahead and weigh in with questions you might have. Many of your questions will be answered when two documents are made known to us. One would be the revised ground lease, because I can't talk to it, I haven't really seen it. Second one is the financial agreements that we are going to hear from them as a proposal, and then we will respond with our traditional language of all I care about is the money. Okay, so that's what they know that we want, and when they deliver the money, then we can talk the rest of it. But if there's any board questions, I think now would be a good opportunity to ask.
Well, and I move forward with a project on the remainder parcel, which would work, or at least hopefully work. I mean, we're looking at an adaptive reuse of the existing school building and restoration of it. And then what we do on the remainder is really something that we're still looking forward to working with the community and working with the school district staff and the county staff on. It's just something we can't finalize at this point. So,
okay. I was just going to say, if I may, before you comment, Mr. Mulara, if this is what the fast track looks like, I'd like to know what the slow track looks like. 7 years.
Well, you're dealing with. I won't. That's, I don't want to get on that's record with saying that.
So the Planning Commission turned down the extra lot, or the county supervisors?
Board of Supervisors denied the public lot.
Have we discussed with Ty Green our appeal rights from that decision?
Most of this resides within the developers and their choices to make, and we would work in conjunction with them. Since the denial of the public lot, it's been my decision with Ty's agreement that we get more intimately involved in the process. Up to this point, the seven-year process that we've been going through has been almost all 100% on the shoulders of Sheer Edge. And we have basically let them do the heavy lifting with the various citizens and agencies and everything else that's required, because it's in the coastal, all that stuff. And they've done a yeoman's job. It's taken forever. But the county surprised us, and not in a good way. And so it became obvious that perhaps the weight of the school district needed to be thrown into this project to support and move it along. And so that's what we've been doing in the last 2 months. I don't know that we've made any progress, but the rationale, the reasoning, and the outcome of why the public lot wasn't granted made virtually no sense at all. Ty is not involved in reviewing any actions about it, but at the same time, we're a little concerned about the county's approach to a brother agency on this particular issue.
Yeah, and as far as our options, I mean, our options would be to litigate, but we're talking about a significant time expenditure and just pushing this out. What we're trying to do right now is live within the reality and try to move forward and then, like I said, try to maximize the return to the district. And I think one of the things, just tagging on what Russell said, what we're trying to do now with the county and is stress the benefits to the school children, because they just seem to be missing that point.
And a lot of people in Abilene did.
They've been treating the school district as a private developer and not understanding the fact that there's really, this money is going towards education and the school children, et cetera. So we've kind of, for lack of a better term, partnered up with staff now, and we're going to be pushing the fact that this benefits the kids, and that's why we need to do this. So.
But there's a better word than partnering with staff, and that's we support them. Okay. I don't want to be a supporter.
Well, I didn't mean, you know what I mean. But working together. So
there you go.
Working together so we can push that on them, because it was real clear at that public lot hearing that they did not perceive the benefit to the kids, and that was really problematic.
Well, here's my problem. That decision significantly impacts I don't have to tell you, the value and potential for the property. You know, and I try to leave my lawyer hat at home as often as I can, but, you know, when a government agency makes an outrageous decision, you walk away from it. How about mandamus? But here's the other thing. That I feel like, you know, that I was thinking of an analogy today, the fugoid oscillation, this famous footage of a pilot trying to control an airplane, but he's having difficulties. And every time the airplane starts to climb, he tries to put the nose down, but by the time the nose comes back down, it's time to hold back up again. I feel like there was such a sea change from when we launched this project that I'm going to be candid, it makes me wonder whether this asset of the district has more value in a future world than it does now. And I'm not saying we should stop it, but land lease income projections, are they going to decrease again?
No, I don't expect them to, but we'll get to the detailed pieces of that. Okay. My submission to you is...
And I just let me say that I believe there's been goodwill and hard work on part of everybody, and none of us saw the events of the last few years, unfortunately. Be wealthy now.
Well,
so that's my concern. But I think everybody's been working hard to try to get it done. Now
the asset continues to exist. The idea to turn it into a revenue stream is still feasible and plausible. It has taken a long time to get, but it wasn't all just the process. There was a lot of market forces at play. There was a lot of partner issues at play. There was a lot of things going on. But I want to be really clear. We have no interest in litigating anything at this point. We feel like the process needs to be honored. We will be able to continue through it, and the outcome is likely to be positive. It just requires a lot of strength of character and patience on our part to make it happen.
Yeah, and if I could just piggyback on the first question you asked about we're still going to pursue a lot for the schoolhouse, so we're not precluded from doing that. We just don't have the ability to do a public lot for it. So now we're going to do a traditional lot for it. So, yeah. But what we're doing, we're doing the public improvements anyways as a condition of the first map, so we don't think we would get additional conditions. It's just the time frame involved, et cetera, and the cost, et cetera. So, you know, we're proceeding forward, and we are going to do a separate lot for the schoolhouse.
So some of the materials that were provided by Dr. Prater, so there's a view shed issue for the schoolhouse across that portion of the lot.
Yeah, Mike may want to get into this, but let me talk just broad overview. As part of the environmental review for the original project, the project that's approved now and we're almost ready to go construction on, we did environmental review for the entire property, not just the portion that we were proposing the development on. So we have a mitigated negative declaration for the entire property, including the schoolhouse, the property down below, and everything. So we've already done our environmental reviews for the entire property, for development on the entire property. The issue that just shows down below is that the development on that portion below the schoolhouse would not block the view to the schoolhouse, which was the concern raised in the environmental documentation. So we're confident that we can come forward with a proposal that addresses the environmental concerns that are already in the environmental negative declaration, and we're not going to start from scratch on environmental documents. So we did that intentionally for the entire property when we did that, so we would not have to revisit that issue at a later date.
Other questions from board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
I just want to thank Marshall for answering my questions today, and he gave me some very clear answers to some of the issues that we brought up today, but thanks for the time.
Thank you.
And other board members? I just want to say I was being facetious about the fast track and the slow track, but it really has been a long time coming. It seems like it's been longer than 7 years. It seems like it's been closer to 10, actually.
You should be on our side of the fence.
Yeah. But I do want to remind the public that the benefit to the children of this school district is, over the term of the lease, the 99 years of the land lease, about $66 million. And that's going to be considerable, filling a considerable need that we have, and that I think the children in our school district and their children will be needing as well. So I guess we'll look. Are you looking for a vote, or are you just looking for a consensus to move forward with the negotiations, given the new documents that you'd be presented with?
Absent any hesitation on the board's part, we'll continue on as we have been. The general concepts that they've given to you here today, you are basically okay with what you know about them. The actual documents that you'll be provided with that you will need to approve at some point in the near future will be the new land lease that we will be amending, and the financial schedule that is coming soon, I hope, and we'll share with you guys as soon as we get it.
Yeah, so if we're ready to go forward with what we discussed, we will get the ground lease and the revised financials to staff immediately. So we're ready to move forward at this point.
Is there anybody that has an objection to us doing that? Okay. Hey, you
got it,
folks.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I
apologize for being late again.
Oh,
but
thank you. I understand.
Chris,
Marshall,
and Jim,
thank
though,
you.
They live here, so. And so does Marilyn. I'm sorry, Marilyn.
Let's move on to superintendent's updates. Let's see. Why don't we go to? Do you want to talk about the status of the state budget, or do we want to? I see Mr. Miller is busy over there, so. Should we start maybe with Initiative 6, Accelerated and Specialized Learning Opportunities?
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
So thank you, Board. First of all, let's start with the Initiative 6, Specialized and Accelerated Learning Opportunities. As I mentioned at our last board meeting, we began a working group, think tank, if you will, to explore some ideas for possible magnet schools, schools within a school, or programs that have specialization built into them. Our first meeting was enthusiastically attended, and a lot of great thinking was evident all over the place, all over the board in terms of ideas. So we really left this initiative as more than just magnet schools. We are working on increasing our AP offerings. That was one of our strategic plan initiatives or SMART goals, and the board already approved an AP art seminar class. We will be adding advanced placement European history at SLO High. It has already existed at Morrobey High School. We'll be adding it at San Luis Obispo High School. And we're working with the advanced placement folks on an advanced placement economics course that will combine both micro and macroeconomics. They're two separate courses right now. We want to combine them to make it a more popular offering for students, so we're working with that. One of our targets was to have a 5% increase in students taking advanced placement exams, and we won't know those results till late spring, although students are starting to sign up. The board should be aware that qualifying socioeconomically disadvantaged students are able to take the exam for only $5 after state reimbursement. So this is, for the time being anyway, still funded in California. Just want to make sure you're aware that we actually set aside a fund centrally in the Instructional Service Learning and Achievement Department so that neither the schools nor the families or students have to pay anything up front. They pay the $5. we get the reimbursement from the state, so it's, you know, again, trying to encourage as many individuals to take that as possible, because the fees are now $87 a test, so it can be pretty high. Any questions on Initiative 6? All right. I apologize that Dr. Gelkeskamp was coming tonight to do a report on career technical education, and she's ill. She sounded quite ill today, so hopefully she's doing better. So you're stuck with me, and so I'm winging it a little bit, because I think, knowing Rita, she probably had something very well designed to present to you on this. But I'll give it my best shot. So if I press the up button, Kim?
Down.
See? So Initiative 10 is all about increasing the ability of all students to graduate from our system career and or college ready. And college readiness and access is one of the things we really want to be about. That being said, an action step of Initiative 10, one of the action steps, is to review our CTE programs and develop articulated CTE pathways, career technical education pathways. There's a lot of old school thought out there that CTE is about the track for students who are not college bound. And there was a time when that was kind of the case. You had these two tracks, you're kind of not college bound or college bound, and we'll steer you in one direction or the other. What we know now is that the skill and knowledge that a student may gain in a career technical education course, sometimes read vocational course, has immense value for college readiness also. And we attempt to work with the UCCSU regions to recognize more of these courses for AG, A through G requirements. And I would argue, in fact, that a youngster in our school system right now, say a 5-year-old or 6-year-old, is probably going to enter a career when they graduate that has not even been conceived of yet. And so we are finding that as we develop pathways and CTE courses, not only about providing, you know, job opportunities or readiness, but it's more importantly, it's about skill attainment that may be useful in a variety of future settings. So let me grab my water. I always do this. So this is an umbrella of, I guess, what career technical education would look like. Sometimes we confuse CTE with ROP. They really are two entities, and they're very connected. ROP, the Regional Occupational Program, is a statewide program, and it's articulated throughout the state. The courses are developed up and down the state, and there's separate funding for ROP courses. CTE courses can be ROP courses, or they can be separate things that a school district may develop on their own. If, heaven forbid, ROP funding were to disappear or go away or change in some fashion, we still would have CTE courses. And in fact, they could be the same courses as ROP courses. It might just be a funding change. But all of them should be connected to industry sectors or a sequence of courses that students may take. Within the ROP industry sectors or the CTE industry sectors, we have things like agriculture and natural resources, arts, media, entertainment, building trades and construction, engineering and design, informational technology, manufacturing and product development, transportation, hospitality, food service. So there's various sequence of courses that students may follow to prepare for both college and career opportunities. And so this year we have our ROP CTE committee made up of teachers and administrators. We are developing in our school district has to do with construction management, because we're realizing that that's a great skill. We have a lot of great industrial technology courses and CTA courses, but to have that ROP capstone construction and construction management course would be a valuable thing for our school district. So other examples of capstone classes are ROP sports medicine, which gives students marketable skills to go work with physical therapists, ROP criminal justice, which is an avenue into the whole law enforcement arena, and as I said, we're developing our ROP construction capstone class. So when this course exists, We think we'll have more career opportunities immediately available for students, but once again, the whole idea is to encourage career and college readiness, and we think the current model of CTE and ROP will do both those things. So, questions? All right, well, thank you. Well, oh, and I should say that three of our wonderful, I don't know if the television can see this, but you might have seen the San Luis Journal has three of our outstanding CTE ROP teachers. We have Jeff Limkill, Tim Fay, and Jed Brewington from San Luis Obispo High School. Great article about them, and these are wonderful educators.
Mr. Beckman.
Not so much a question as a comment. This year, this past year, the state legislature approved a piece of legislation, and the governor signed it, that would allow a ROP CTE class to replace one of the foreign language years of foreign language that's required as an A to G requirement to get into this UCCSU system. It allows it, but the school board has to approve that
right.
as an option. And I don't know whether that's been discussed by staff at this point or whether we should be discussing it at the board level.
We have discussed it as staff a little bit, and what we want to do before bringing it as a potential board policy is kind of vet it with our high school principals, our counselors, our teachers. It sounds like a good thing, and I think that my take is we will probably be bringing, and we have actual policy written now by CSBA. We just got something last week about it. That it is probably a good thing to do because it just adds more flexibility for students. It isn't without some costs, and that's one of the things we have to look at. Some of those CTE courses that students might take in order to graduate will not meet. A through G requirements, but they will meet graduation requirements under the new law. And so we want to be very careful that we're clear with people what it takes to get out of high school and what it takes to get into college. We're working very hard on getting more and more and more of our CTE courses A through G approved, but that's up to the regents, and they reject as often as they accept CTE courses as being part of the A through G. So the governor's, what he signed into law and what the assembly bill was basically to change the foreign language requirement as a graduation requirement and allow CTE as taking the place of it if a student wanted to. And it sounds like a good thing, but we'll have to kind of make sure that if we adopt that, we're very clear with parents and families about what meets graduation requirements and what doesn't.
Okay, thank you. I'm very excited about the fact that staff's looking at it.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah. I just want to commend you for your presentation, but I must say that Liz Moore kind of took me through this a couple of weeks ago, and you just clarified it for me. But I didn't quite get the distinction between CTE and ROP until it was explained to me, and that some of these courses, like you had Design 1 and 2, is sort of a gateway to the ROP classes, the more advanced classes. So thank you.
Yeah, and it's important that ROP, one of the laws is that a student must be 16 years of age in order to enter into an ROP class. And yet we don't want ninth graders or even 10th graders who don't reach the age of 16 to not have access to career technical education. So the idea is to build up to those ROP classes, which are mostly taken in the junior and senior year.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Rick. Wow. Let's move on to status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. We have a two-part project tonight to discuss. Number one is the status of the state budget. And this is the time of the year where everybody is digesting what the governor turned out in December, and they're having committee meetings, and they're discussing different ideas that he's thrown out. But reality is what we're waiting for is the May revise that happens around May 15th. which gives the governor an opportunity to alter his direction somewhat based upon the conversations that are had in the previous 6 months. Because the fair share goes away, then obviously losing it will have a big impact. It's up to $7 million as it currently exists. And depending on what they classify as a categorical through the legislation, it could actually go to $9 million. So as it exists right now, it's $7 million. It could be $9 million. We'd have to wait and see. But the interesting piece is that in the conversations that the individual legislators are having in their conferences and in their different meetings, the direction that they're more comfortable going is not to make this a budget bill, but to make this a policy bill. So they want to change it from an action that's in relation to a budget cutting or budget revamping to an actual discussion about the policy of revamping revenues for the individual districts. And it's a far better thing they do by putting it in a policy discussion as opposed to a budget item. It'll take longer, but it'll be more thoughtful, and the outcome will probably be better. There's probably not a lot of debate about the individual question, should California revamp its method of funding schools? Mm-hmm. The answer is probably yes. But the outcome of it is that it has to be in such a way as to hold districts generally harmless and not penalize them for some characteristic or some outcome that they currently have simply because. So a hold harmless agreement that revamps the revenue system of the state of California is probably a good conversation ultimately to have. But I submit it's a multi-year conversation. It's not going to be accomplished in a 3 to 4 month committee meeting related to a budget item. So we'll have to wait and see and stay tuned. The governor's already changed his tune about homeschool transportation. He's starting to look at some of the different aspects of his plan that might not have made sense. And so hopefully this will be one of them. It would be a good thing for us to watch very carefully because the outcome could be very large. Now, on a district level...
Can I ask a question? So this weighted student average, does that mean after, if that's put in place, that the fair share thing won't come up every year anymore?
No. Okay, so really all it is, it looks at revenue limits and it decides that certain districts are entitled to a larger share of the entire pot because they have a need. And they're identifying the need as something along the way of socioeconomic status or EL or some other thing that they will create. But what is the need? And then what they'll end up doing is they'll taking, this is the current conversation, taking the pot of categorical money and dividing it towards the districts, giving it to the districts that have that particular need they want to address. We'll see. Okay, but the second part of the conversation is about our budget as a district. Okay, so what we have is we have a budget calendar, and this has been surfaced to the board. The next steps for us as staff is we're creating our budget team, if you will, and we're going to get the representatives from the labor groups, from the principals, from teachers, from different areas, and bring them together for discussions. We're also having conversations with larger groups, such as PTA, the DLAC, the district forum, which used to be the curriculum committee, but I can never keep track of the name change. But different groups amongst the districts have now heard about our budget, some of the issues, and the principals, and we'll continue to feed information and get feedback from them. That's an important, very, very important piece of the process. But the group that's going to distill this information, look at the different aspects of it, is the budget team, and it will have the technical responsibility. To distill all that information and give it to the superintendent so he can make recommendations to you. Now, just for information purposes, you want to go over the calendar?
Yeah.
I'm getting all choked up.
So some of the feedback that I received from the board last summer is in the retreat is that they would like, more opportunities to weigh in and provide feedback on some of the recommendations. And so in developing this budget timeline or calendar timeline, we've included, we did this collaboratively as a cabinet team, and what we've done is we've identified essentially five opportunities for the board for the superintendent's recommendations on the budget based on all that feedback. So that first reading gives you an ample opportunity to provide feedback. Then we come back in May 22nd, right during that time, mind you, that's the May revision. Okay, so we'll have more information as we go. And so I will then have that as a refined second reading of the budget. And then the June 5th meeting, we would actually ask the board to adopt the budget for the following year. Okay? Now, it has been mentioned that some districts are creating two budgets, one for what we think will happen and one for, oh, my God, what if it did actually happen this way? But we'll know more as we go through this process. And I just want to make sure you understand that we're making every attempt to give you opportunities to weigh in on the budget.
And Dr. Prater, we know that this is a budget wherein we'll be asked to make some cuts. And do you plan to present those to us in the tiered format that we kind of are familiar with already?
Yeah, I'm going to try to keep this as familiar as possible. That's why we're going out to the groups and the teams. We're going to share with you in the initial meeting in March what we think, a broad swipe, what we think the target should be. And based on that, some possibilities within the tiered structure that you talked about, that you mentioned, to give you some opportunities to say, whoa, you know, I think this should be considered at a higher priority, perhaps, you know. And then from there, I want you to know that we'll continue to work on those suggestions and those ideas. And so those tiers might look different each time we meet, but it'll be based on your feedback and it'll be based on the team's recommendations.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I don't see any other comments coming forward. So let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like an item pulled. Item number 4, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 5, acceptance of donations. I'd like to pull that. Item number 6, disposition of surplus property. Item number 7, approval of furniture and equipment requests. And item number 8, approval of purchase orders. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Mr. Buckman makes a motion to approve items 4, 6, 7, and 8. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. I just wanted to pull item number 5 because I thought we just had some significant donations this time, and I wanted to recognize some folks. First is Los Ranchos School received $5,000 from the B.K. Simon Family Charitable Foundation. Instructional Services and Technology received an $8,000 appliance from Lightspeed Systems. And then the Rotary Club of San Luis Obispo, the Daybreak Club, donated $5,800 to fund grants for our teachers. And I just wanted to, on behalf of the board, thank all the people who donate to the district and to the kids, not just these people, but, of course, everybody that does throughout the year. So I'd like to make a motion to accept item. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Roger, of course.
Well, so long as you're doing that, I just wanted to add that just about every board meeting under acceptance of donations, there are noted donations from PG&E's campaign for the community. It would appear that those are PG&E employees who designate these funds that are accrued through their work to various schools in the district, and many schools are represented. This particular board meeting, we've got Bishop's Peak received $10 from an anonymous employee of PG&E. SLO High School received $300 from I beg your pardon here, but Behruz Shakibnia. That's as close as I can get, but I'm very grateful. And each time there are various schools receiving funding through this campaign for the community, so I think that they need to be acknowledged. PG&E and their employees, who are parents, former parents, just concerned community members who designate the funds for various schools in our district, we are really grateful.
Right, and just, I guess, just a reminder to the public that there are organizations who you may work for when you donate money that they match those funds. And if you donate to the schools, of course, it's doubly great because you get a tax write-off and it helps your kids. Okay, we have a motion for item number 5. I don't think we had a second yet.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 10, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to...
The team has generated from just a simple cell phone use policy has been pretty significant instructionally. And running schools, we're finding different viewpoints, different opinions, quite disparate opinions. And so what we're trying to do now is bring to the board something that has been vetted, that people in our organization that actually apply these policies feel good about. And so I appreciate the fact that that this came to the board as a discussion item, and I think what you'll get probably in March is something more robust that and something you could weigh in on and feel good about. Okay?
Okay. Then let's move on to item number 11, which is reports by board members. Does anybody have a report they'd like to make? Mr. Quisenberry.
Get there earlier.
Well, I do want to mention that related to a parent education class at Laguna Middle School, we've had a lot of help from the custodian, Keith Santoyani. He's really been a big help to the class. I want to mention also that on the 16th of February, I was privileged to attend the Morro Bay High girls basketball game and watch them triumph over Nordoff. I want to commend Coach Canarelli and the young women for their hard work and their success. Unfortunately, the following Saturday, they had a journey south to St. Bernard's, the alma mater of 5 of my siblings, and lost to St. Bernard's, which was the 18th ranked team in the state. Also on the 17th, Friday, I had a chance to go to the Career Center at Morro Bay High School and talk to Betty Ayotte about their career day. They're planning for the juniors in early May. So it's been a great couple of weeks to be at our schools and observe the hard work of teachers and classified staff.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes. As always, I've been amazed at what's going on around the district. I did get to participate in the Los Osos Middle School Career Day and wanted to congratulate everybody at the school that worked on that. It was probably the best one that I've been to, and I think the students really enjoyed it. I also wanted to just let everybody know I will be attending the ROP. They're having a retreat this year. We've never done this, and we're sort of going to just take a look at ROP and sort of say, well, if it didn't exist as it does now, what would it look like? And so that will probably be a very interesting discussion.
And last week I was fortunate enough to have lunch here at Los Osos Middle School and got a chance to visit some classes and talk to some teachers, and I want to thank them for that. And then last Wednesday, State Senate candidate Bill Monig was in town, and I had an opportunity to meet with him and just to talk to him about schools and the importance of public education. So seeing that we have no further business, we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.